Welcome back to this week's DBM Strategy Update. It's been a heavy week in the markets, and an even heavier week for the geopolitical map. We've got oil pushing triple digits, a new face at the Fed, and some deep philosophical questions about whether Western democracy is hitting its expiration date.
It feels like the Great Reset everyone talked about years ago is finally happening, but not in the way the elites planned. We're seeing the friction of a world trying to transition from a debt-based system to, well, whatever comes next.
Let's start with the immediate fire, the Strait of Hormuz. With the blockade still in effect, crude is at $98 a barrel. Usually, Bitcoiners love a good chaos hedge narrative, but we saw a brief dip to $74,000 this week. What's the play there?
It's the classic liquidity flush. When energy prices spike that fast, it acts like a giant tax on everything. Investors sell their winners, Bitcoin being the biggest winner of the decade, to cover margin calls and rising costs. But look at the secondary effect. Governments are already talking about energy relief checks.
Which leads us perfectly into the quote that's been circulating on every Bitcoin forum this morning. The famous Tytler cycle. It basically argues that democracy is a temporary phase that ends when voters realize they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury.
And that is the fiat trap. In a sound money world, if a government wants to give you money, they have to tax someone else first. It's visible, it's painful, it's honest. But in a fiat system, they just print it. It feels like a free lunch until you realize the lunch is being paid for by the devalued savings of your future self.
Tytler maps out this sequence from abundance to selfishness to apathy to dependence. I look at the current state of the economy, the tariff-driven inflation hitting 10.3%, the reliance on government subsidies to survive basic energy costs, and it feels like we've reached the dependence stage.
Exactly. And Tytler says dependence leads straight back to bondage. When you rely on the state for your literal survival because the currency has been debased to the point where you can't afford eggs or gas, you aren't a citizen anymore. You're a subject. You can't speak out against the hand that feeds you.
This is where the Bitcoin thesis shifts from a number go up to a civilization saver. If the problem is that voters can vote for largesse because the treasury is a bottomless pit of printed paper, how does Bitcoin fix the incentive?
It's the immovable object. Bitcoin is the only financial system in history that doesn't care who you voted for. You can't vote for more than 21 million coins. It forces a society back into the courage and liberty phases of the cycle because it demands productivity. You have to provide value to the world to get Bitcoin. You can't just lobby a politician for it.
It's the ultimate check and balance. By holding your own keys, self-sovereign ownership, you are effectively opting out of the apathy and dependence loop. You're saying, I will be responsible for my own future and I won't let my labor be harvested to fund the collapsing system.
It's a peaceful revolution. While the headlines focus on the Fed's new leadership and whether Kevin Warsh will keep rates at 3.75%, the real story is the silent migration. People are moving their life's work from a system that must inflate to survive to a system that cannot inflate by design.
The Tytler cycle suggests a collapse is inevitable, but for the first time in human history, we have a life raft that isn't controlled by the people sinking the ship.
This week also saw the heavy-hitting conversation with the Bitcoin king himself, Michael Saylor. As ever, Saylor did not hold back on his vision for the next decade.
It was a masterclass in macroeconomics. He basically laid out a 10-year countdown. He says we have exactly one decade to stake our claim before the world is fundamentally reshaped by AI and robotics. He sees several main factors in play. Let's break them down.
1. The invisible tax, currency debasement. Saylor started with a reality check on why everyone feels poorer. He claims the dollar supply has been expanding at roughly 7% a year for a century.
Exactly. He calls it monetary debasement. If you don't own assets, you're essentially paying for government expansion, wars, social programs, deficits, without even realizing it. He looked back at 50,000 pages of history and basically said this cycle of printing and defaulting has happened in every civilization, from Babylon to the American colonies.
2. The AI and robot wave, demonetizing human capital. This was the scariest part for me. Saylor argues that human capital is being demonetized. White-collar bots, they're already here, automating legal advice, accounts clerks, and medical opinions. Blue-collar robots, he gives them 10 years to arrive and start doing the heavy lifting.
Right. His point is that if a robot can do it, it's not going to appreciate in value. Hard work and talent are becoming less scarce. He even suggested that buying $200,000 of desirable property might be a better investment than a $200,000 law degree today, because AI will eventually provide 10,000 lawyers for $10 a month.
So what should people own? Saylor's rule is the Bernard Arnault test. Buy assets that someone richer, more cultured, and more intelligent than you will want to buy in a decade. Abundant? Ketchup, pencils, digital music, and basic housing. Things robots can make. Scarce. Waterfront property in Miami, the Beatles' music rights, Bitcoin, or a top-tier sports team.
And that leads right into his digital capital argument. He views Bitcoin as the highest form of capital because it's the digital manifestation of economic scarcity. He calls it a viral bank in cyberspace that feeds on chaos. Next up is the fourth point, Bitcoin, the thermodynamic truth. He got pretty technical about why Bitcoin won the protocol wars. Just like Arabic numerals replaced Roman numerals because they were more efficient, Bitcoin is replacing gold because it's faster and easier to move through space.
He also touched on the armed society concept. Because Bitcoin is portable and hard to seize, it forces governments to be more polite. If you can teleport your wealth to another jurisdiction in an hour, it's much harder for a state to just take it via rent control or kinetic confiscation. Last up is the future, MicroStrategy's Crypto Reactor. They wrapped up talking about what Saylor's building now, specifically digital credit. He's trying to solve the volatility problem for the average person.
Yeah, he basically wants to run the Crypto Reactor so you don't have to. He's offering instruments like STRC that aim to provide a stable 10 to 11% yield backed by Bitcoin's performance, but without the roller coaster volatility that scares away retirees and regular savers.
The bottom line is the robots are coming. Fiat currency as we know it is melting, and if you're not holding scarce, desirable property, you're going to be left relying on universal entitlements in a socialist wave.
Heavy stuff. Great to be ahead of this shift as we develop our digital businesses in the age of AI and blockchain. Each week, we take a deep look at this process in part two of the DBM strategy call. Head to the link in the show notes to access the call live 11 a.m. UTC every Monday. Keep stacking and see you next time.